You're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Chess, and I've got an episode for you today that is not of my own doing. That's right. Tech and Jason.
Hi, this is my fault. Hi, I'm Tech.
And Jason.
Hey, what's going on?
Decided that they wanted to hijack the podcast. They wanted to talk about military misrepresentation. And so we're going to do that for you today. But before we get into it, we just want to thank our patrons. We want to thank Aaron Jackson. We want to thank Aurora Lee, Beth, Dagny, Harold, Ian, Jason. Feel like I know that name.
Thank you, Dad.
Jen. Feel like I know that name, too. Ken, Kinsey, Lynette, Melissa, Mike, Patrick, Rich the TT, Shane Poole, Susan, Susanna, Frank, and sometimes Nick. Thanks, guys.
Bathtub Mermaid?
That was Melissa. I didn't go into the whole spiel of the fact that she's the Bathtub Mermaid, but you will be able to listen to new episodes of hers because she is participating in the Dog Days of Podcasting. So if you're listening to this now, it's probably right in the middle. So go check that out at dogdaysofpodcasting.com. There's awesome stuff. Anyway, military misrepresentation. Tech, introduce us. Let us know. What's this all about?
It's a common problem that the mass media that we consume is made for a generic audience, and that any sort of specialty or niche program tends to get lower viewership, so that most of the major networks or movie production houses or video game companies don't want generally to make a product for a niche audience. They want to make something that'll appeal to everyone. And the problem with that is that you have to dumb a lot of things down. And this could most be seen with what they did with the new Star Trek movies, where they didn't want it to be Star Trek because, well, that's just for nerds. We want to appeal to a new generation of fans and new people. So they got J.J. Abrams to completely destroy the franchise and Red Matter, my behind, and tried to make a schlocky sci-fi action flick. And you know what? It was a pretty good the three of them, they were good sci-fi movies. They're not Star Trek. They're pretty good sci-fi movies. And the Star Wars movies he made afterwards, pretty good Star Wars movies. But he didn't do Trek. So this happens a lot with pretty much everything. If you look at CSI and you talk to an actual forensics guy, they make mistakes all the time. You look at any police procedural, talk to an actual police officer, mistakes all over the place. Law shows, talk to a lawyer, see how many mistakes they make. But being in the army, and Jason being a vet, I'm sure, what they do to the military in these shows, how we are misrepresented in almost everything really, really, really annoys me. And this is where I want to start talking today.
Well, a lot of that, though, I don't know how it is with the Canadian military, but I know here in the States, there's actual rules. Matter of fact, I think there are laws against the depiction of military uniforms in their accurate state, right? Which is why a lot of the times, a lot of military guys will nitpick, like, oh, well, they're wearing the insignia not wrong, they're wearing it wrong, or this shouldn't be there, or whatever. A lot of the times, that's because they don't want you to depict an actual accurately put on military uniform.
Right, and I get that.
I actually have a little bit on that. You are not allowed to depict the accurate military uniform unless you have permission by the U.S. military. And in order to do so, they must be on set and approve everything, which means they have script approval, they have scene approval, they have final editing approval, which is why Battleship is actually accurate military uniform, because it was basically a big ad. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I think Top Gun is another example of...
Top Gun is the premier example of a United States Navy recruiting commercial. It was a two-hour commercial, is all it was. And it was an amazing movie. Yeah. Let me go back to the very beginning. The misrepresentations of the military in media. I am going to go all the way back to the Andrews sisters.
The who?
The Andrews sisters. They were a music group from the 40s. But he's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. No, no, that's B Company or Bravo Company or Baker Company. No, no, it's not Company B. And I'm sorry, that's how you had to write it to put it into your song. You could have found a better rhyme, but no, no, he is not the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. Which leads me to my other favorite thing that I hate in live stage acts and music acts. Rod Stewart, you are guilty of this, and a lot of other musicians. When you've got the dancing girls on stage doing the fake marching that I'm emulating here on camera that no one can see because this is a podcast, but when you're doing the fake marching with the knife hands going up in front of your body like some sort of a weird stilted robot, and you're kicking your knees up way too high to the beat of the music because I'm marching because I a soldier. No, you're not. You're a dancing girl who got paid $8 to go on stage with Rod Stewart. Stop. Just stop now. It's insulting.
You know, a lot of those representations, they are altered because they're for entertainment. And, you know, it's problematic because a lot of people see that and they attune that to actually being correct.
Right. Just, and that's the problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just like with traditionally black colleges where they do the military, and I put that in quotes, you guys can't see me, the military style marching bands with the high knees and stuff like that. That is not how you march.
That's how we march. That's not how you march.
Yeah, no, it's not. Not at all.
No, but what I've always loved about those marching bands, and you're a tuba player, so no, it's the dancing sousaphones, the left, right, up, down, left, right, up, down, left, right. I love that.
Flashing is fun.
It's called flashing.
Yes, because the bells, you generally the only thing you polish on a sousaphone is the bell, because when you do those moves, you flash.
That's cool.
But no, and also, by the way, if you notice in traditionally black college marching bands that do the high steps, the tubas don't actually wear the tubas while they're marching. They actually hold them off of their bodies, because if they don't, they'll start kneeing their sousaphone. Yeah, I can't stand that style of marching. I just can't. Like, one of the cool things about when I was in high school was our band was a traditional military style. All of our movements, all of our like about face, everything was military. We didn't do high knees, and we did structured, regimented formations, which are all segments of a actual good depiction of a military unit. You know, about face, blah, blah, blah. Mind you, half left face is not technically a command. But it is a command.
Anyway. We call that incline. But here's my big problem is if you're going to be now, you know, Nutty talked about how you have to have like approval and editing approval if you depict it correctly. Well, a lot of the production companies that don't depict it correctly, who just go off and do their own thing, man, I wish they would hire some type of consultant to get the little things right, because they try to get the big things right. And you know, oh, we're going to get them to hold the guns properly. Cool. Can you teach them how to wear a hat without being an embarrassment? Or,
well, see, I know we disagree on this because I wear my beret with style.
No, no. And I wear my beret with style, but you are a rolling disaster.
See that again, we disagree. But I bet we will agree on this. I have only seen maybe two proper salutes in a film.
Oh my God, I was going to talk about that. Saluting. I am going to teach everyone now how to properly salute. So take your right hand, close all of your fingers, and lay your thumb on top. Now, hold your upper arm so it is parallel to the ground. And now, with a flat forearm and a flat wrist, point your middle finger at your right temple and cant your hand ever so slightly so that I can't see any of your palm. Just turn it just like that. And when you bring it up and you bring it down, it goes in the shortest line possible. So from straight down at your side, up to your temple, and back. You'll notice what I don't do is it doesn't come to right here in the middle of my head. It doesn't come over here. It's not over here. Unless I'm an old-timey Brit or a German, it's not palm out. Yeah, no, I am not looking into the distance. It is not above my eyebrows. And I also don't do what I call, the Arnold J. Rimmer triple flip. But my person, this, that, Or, yeah, Down the Side of the Face is a good one. Or my personal favorite, what I call the sunrise, where it has to come up and around and then back around. No, this has never been a thing. And I also, I laugh when I see this, even when I see this in real life, what I call the spring, where it goes up and shakes because he brought it up too fast. And you see it go up and go.
By the way, I feel like that should have a sound effect every time someone does that.
There it is. And it shakes. It's like, man, calm it down and relax. It's just a salute. All it means is hi. That's all it means. That guy over there is your boss. You're going to say hi to him. And you go, hi, and you put your hand up. It doesn't mean any more than that. And they add such an importance to it. But they have, like, little kids saluting their dogs. They have the dog saluting somebody else. And they add all this extra importance. Two guys are meeting. They salute 84 times during their conversation. It's like, yeah, no. Just say hi and put it down again.
By the way, I love Nutty's faces. This is so amusing for me. It's great.
You know, I've actually saluted officers by going, what up, sir?
This is an episode that I'm actually going to be fairly quiet on because there are two people more knowledgeable than I. And
But you're the voice of reason.
Well, I'm the voice of the civilian. But yeah, no, I mean, it's I understand it completely. And it anytime there is something that represents what you are on screen, it's always going to bother you.
Well, I have a great example of this for Nutty. Anytime you're watching CSI and they're working in Photoshop,
zoom and enhance.
Zoom and enhance.
Yeah, that's
zoom
not and a enhance. Tool. That's not a tool. Yeah, anything having to do with art stuff, that's always an issue for me. There's a particular book I can think of. But for other people, like, okay, so anytime Catholics are represented on TV, it is always dead wrong. And the funniest thing, this is the funniest thing, these characters often will be generic Christians until they decide, hey, let's put them in a confessional. And suddenly they're Catholics. And then they'll go back to being generic. Say again?
Well, they'll say a couple things in Latin and then they're suddenly Catholic.
Yeah, which Catholics don't even do. But that's the thing. Like, everything's always wrong. So whatever it is that you are, if it's military, if it's art, if you're an IT guy and you see somebody go, click, click, click. Oh, I just hacked into their mainframe. No, you didn't. Shut up. Or when you watch Hackers and you see the Cookie Monster eating the code. Come on.
With Penn Jillette as a sis up.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still a great movie, and Angelina Jolie is hot, so.
Well, true. Yes, indeed, but Penn Jillette is not a sis up.
So, no, let's talk about some specific representations of military. So, Shane is in the chat, and he wants to know what you guys think of Blackadder.
Oh, my God. Blackadder. Was it Blackadder Goes Forth, the one where they did it in the trenches of the Great War? Is amazing. It is fantastic. It is hilarious because it doesn't take itself seriously. The little things they get correct. The uniforms are worn properly, and you know it's an accurate depiction of the you know the horribleness of the trenches. And like, the last episode is one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. But the jokes, you know, they use the war as a backdrop for funny jokes. Like when, you know, they have the one officer whose name is Captain Darling, and the general always
That's right, about, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. House himself.
Yeah. Come along, darling. Yes, sir. And you know, the driver who is very obviously a woman, but the general can't see it. So he says, come along, Bob. So good.
For anyone who is not a viewer of Blackadder, can you give us a 30-second synopsis of this show?
Blackadder is Mr. Bean before he was Mr. Bean. It's Rowan Atkinson himself. It is four series, each 6 or 8 episodes, and it's the same character, Edmund Blackadder, at different periods in English history as the greatest buffoon to ever make his way into the aristocracy, and his idiot manservant, Baldric, who is the star of the show. But it the first one is the Dark Ages, then the Renaissance, then the Industrial Revolution, and then World War One. And Blackadder Goes Forth is the World War One series. It is the best of them all. It's got the greatest jokes. It's really, really good. That depiction of the military did not bother me because it was just there to set up the gag. And it was done well and respectfully. And, you know, the army was there to set up the gag, but the army was not the gag. Nor was it, I'm going to try to do it seriously and cock the whole thing up and then, you know, insult a lot of people. It was just done really well. I love that series.
Yeah. And so in addition to, you know, some names that you might know, Rowan Atkinson, as we said, Hugh Laurie, Mr. House himself,
Stephen Fry,
and a bunch of other British comedians. So very
good.
Cool.
I don't think Stephen Fry can do no wrong.
Yes. So there's... one show that I want to put out there as they may get many things wrong, like continuity, actual history of when things actually happened, having a show go way longer than the war it's supposed to represent. But I think, and this is from talking to many people in the military, that it gets the emotions correct.
What show are you talking about, Nutty?
Ed, that would be MASH.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. I was actually just having this conversation the other day because an episode of MASH was on. And I was like, man, this show is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of, you know, an accurate depiction that's here, but they get, especially in the finale of that show, they get.
It wasn't
so
a chicken.
They get so much right. And one of the things that a lot of people don't kind of pick up on is the fact that it's a lot of the problem with these guys is the disillusionment. And they also have to leave their friends behind. Like they split up. Like, you know, and as someone who has done that, right? When I got out of the army, my boy Barnett went to North Carolina. My boy Trader went back to Missouri. My boy Casado went back down to Florida. Davis went back to South Carolina. Goodrich went back to Kansas. Graves went to Northern Virginia, and literally we scattered to the four winds. And these are guys that I had literally been beside, nearly been blown up with, had spent the last 6 years working alongside, and basically knew all. We all knew everybody's dirty little secrets and had a blast doing it, and not so many blasts because working from 2 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night for months on end sucks. But when you do it with the same people for that long, you build bonds that you can never get rid of. And that finale of MASH depicts that to a T.
Every episode of MASH, I love that show so much because it gets the truth of what what being a soldier in chaos is. You know, what warfare is, what keeps you alive. Your sense of humor keeps you alive because you have to laugh because crying every day hurts too much. So you find humor in everything. And they do it so, so well. And, you know, Alan Alda, you know, they made that joke on an episode of Futurama where they have an Alan Alda robot that his one hand is a martini glass and he has a switch on the side of his body that goes from irreverent to maudlin, irreverent to maudlin, irreverent to maudlin. Because, you know, it's not a war, it's a murder flick. It's not a war, it's a murder. Because that's how you have to be. And they do it so bloody well. The only thing that kept me alive for my two tours was my sense of humor and was other people's sense of humor and the stupid jokes that we would play on each other. And it's the only reason I'm still here is that, you know, we were able to laugh and we would go through these horrible catastrophes and you have to laugh, you know, holding up a human foot and telling people, that, hey, look, does this look like barbecue to you? It's the only way I'm going to survive that encounter with death when it gets that close. And, you know, MASH to me is pretty close to a perfect TV show. When you look at the sets that they built compared to the photographs of the, yet again, what they did is they got the little things right. The uniforms are on, the set design is 100% perfect, and the jokes are there, but what they're making fun of is not the military. They're not making fun of the army. They're using the army to sort of set the stage for the jokes. Okay, so the fact that they have this giant elaborate still to make gin, where did they find juniper berries in Korea in 1951? Who cares? You know, that's what makes it funny. That's the exaggeration.
The fact that the show lasts like three times as long as the actual war.
Yeah, exactly. It was a 10, 11 seasons for a 3-year war.
Yeah.
No one talks about the cooks making booze. We don't do that.
But absolutely not.
So what are other nominations of shows that do it right?
I have a really interesting pick, I feel. But it doesn't, it's not all of the military. It's just one thing that almost every soldier has had. Well, actually, every soldier has had. And that's a drill sergeant. And I think you know where I'm going here.
I do.
Major Payne.
What?
Not where I thought you were going, but.
Oh, Jason.
Man, I really need to see that movie again because it's been a long time.
Here's the deal. The reason why I say this is because it is a literal caricature of what an actual drill sergeant is, but they get it right. Because one of the things that people think about drill sergeants are loud, boisterous, and intimidating, right? Most of the time, that's a show. Like, that's that they have to be that way. Or Private Dumb McGee over there will run amok. So they literally put on an act. Now, I've met some drill sergeants who were as intimidating as they come, and that was just them.
He's back, he's back. Who, the man that lives in my closet? Ventilates the closet door with his Beretta. Well, if he ain't dead, he's plenty scared.
Yeah, but no, and the reason why I love the movie is because I literally had a drill sergeant who was a black man with a gold tooth, and I kid you not, like, it was literally just a diminutive. The only difference is he was like 5'4", and Wayne's is like 6 foot something, but their mannerisms, like, and that's he used to smoke me all the time because he would say something and that gold tooth would glint and I'd be like, oh my god, it's me. And I'd start laughing and he'd be like, you think something funny, Private? And I'm like, oh god, here we go. And but it's those moments in that show where he's being ridiculous, like utterly absurd, and then I flash back to a moment where I'm like, yeah, or something like that. Yeah. Or how the kids would try to get away with things around him. Oh, yeah. It's one of the most ridiculous depictions of something in the military. But it's, if you've ever been a private in the barracks trying to stay up at night and avoid the drill sergeant doing his rounds, or have you hired a dumb private to scale the building with tied together sheets to go get candy for everybody? And then he gets caught. So the female drill sergeant smokes you guys for 4 hours in a thunderstorm. You understand all those things and why they are so ridiculous, but at the same time, it's actually kind of true.
I have to mention, we have to talk about the Marine Corps, and we have to talk about Arlie Ermey and the first half of Full Metal Jacket and every other portrayal that Gunny Ermey has done since. So when Stanley Kubrick was doing Full Metal Jacket, he hired an actor to play the role of Gunnery Sergeant Hartman. The actor had a coach, a guy named Arlie Ermey, who was there to coach him on how to be a DI. And the actor was doing such a bad job that he ended up, through a really funny audition, giving the role to the coach instead, who had been an actual drill instructor at Paris Island. And Arlie Ermey, ever since, has been our beloved Sergeant Major, not Sergeant Major, but our beloved drill instructor, our gunnery sergeant ever since. And he has shown up time and time again doing, you know, voice roles in everything from Space Above and Beyond to Invader Zim. And slim-licking smort crab.
Let's not forget him in The Frighteners.
Right, and Frighteners, oh, and
right, he was in The Frighteners. That's
and Saving Silverman.
Saving Silverman, absolutely.
That's the other one you were thinking
of. He's been in everything, and
he's always just the gunny.
He's gunny, and man, like, I think every soldier worth his salt has memorized at least the first half of Full Metal Jacket, and you know, that's what troops expect, and it's what we all expect, and get kind of disappointed when that's not reality. But he ad-libbed like 90% of those lines. That was just one of my favorites. It's a stupid throwaway line in the movie. The guy's doing chin-ups at the end of a row of monkey bars. And it's like, give me 10, 8, 9, 10, one for the core. And the guy goes and he gets about halfway and he drops. He goes, I guess the core don't get theirs today. And that just makes me laugh so much. It's such a good line that, oh, well, I asked for one more and you couldn't do it. Doesn't matter. Oh, well, let's move on. Carry on there, troop.
Again, it's those moments like that in the depiction of a drill sergeant that are ridiculous and silly, but they're absolutely true. Because I recall so many times where we're getting smoked and we were so ingrained to do what they tell us that we start pushing, but we don't start counting. So they're like, how many is that, privates? Well, looks like you didn't do any. And they just keep going. And it's those things that they get right, even though, again, Major Payne is this cartoonish caricature.
So let's talk about things that did it badly. Or, Nutty, you have something to add?
Yeah, no, definitely. That's what I wanted to move on to next is I want to talk about, tell me about some really egregious mistakes. Tell me about things, movies or shows that really bug you.
So it's they were out in the 80s and 90s. Since then, they've gotten a grip on it. And it's where, like I said, if you use the military as a backdrop to set up your story and then you have your jokes, if you make fun of the military or that is your joke, I don't find it funny. So number one, I'm going to bring up, and I'm going to get hate for this, but I really, really, really hate the movie Stripes with Bill Murray. I despise the combat Winnebago, the stupid drill routine, the fact that I'm supposed to think that paunchy mid-30s Bill Murray somehow got into recruit training. No. I do not find it funny in any way. I don't even want to talk about Private Benjamin. I just disaster.
I have an argument for Private Benjamin. And yes, the military stuff is all wrong, but it was not as bad when it was made as it is today, because when it was made, it was saying something important, and today it's really horrible what it's saying.
Yeah,
let's talk about Stripes for now.
Go ahead.
You know, one of the fine lines people walk with comedy is picking who they want to offend and who not to offend. And some comedians just want to offend everyone. And I feel those are the best. Looking at you, Dave Chappelle, Paul Mooney. Love you guys.
George Carlin, one of my heroes. Absolutely.
You know, when you just go to offend everyone, that means people can be mad, but they're like, well, they gave it to them too. But when it comes to Stripes, it squarely puts its tongue in its cheek, but it's firmly in the direction of the military. It's not like the military is there to be the to set up the gag.
It is the gag.
It literally is the gag.
Yeah.
And it's the same problem that I had with the Power Rangers movie. You can't tell me a character's autistic and then have them be the butt of the joke.
Right. You just can't. We're beyond that now.
Exactly. And I think when they made Stripes, they were like, who can we put in the lead role? And maybe people won't get mad. Because everybody loves Bill Murray, right? We all love Bill Murray, right? You know? Or, you know, Sergeant Bilko.
I thought we were supposed to not like Bill Murray. I thought that was the whole point. I thought he was... Doesn't he play a sleaze in every single role?
Yes, but because Bill Murray has such great comedic timing, and he is, to me, some of the most funny people. He's one of the funniest. He's in my top 10 of hilarious people. And they think because he is so funny that, yeah, we won't like his character, but we'll let it slide because we like Bill Murray. If you think about it, in Ghostbusters, he's kind of a creep, but we love him. He's one of the best parts of that movie.
So what are some other egregious errors? I'm going to just throw one little thing that's been bugging me because Tech did mention Star Trek earlier. And Star Trek has a lot of military issues. They claim to base it on naval, ranks, but they're kind of inconsistent there. And for some reason, your trade changes quite often, basically because they don't want to post you off your ship and they want to be able to promote you. Somehow you go from operations to security chief, whatever, no big deal. But in Star Trek 2009, when Uhura lost her stripes and was no longer an officer. Thank you, J.J. Abrams. You suck. Moving on.
Trek is its own thing, and it's so far ahead in the future, and they based it so loosely on an actual military, and there's so... The only thing that has really bugged me about Trek and, you know, their chain of command thing is, why is it that, you know, you have a spaceship with a 1,000 crew members on it? You have 1,000 people, but the only ones we ever talk to are the officers, and we forget the 800 enlisted men that are on this ship. We have a planet full of like flesh-eating bacteria monsters. Oh, well, we'd better send a crew down to check it out. So it'll be the first officer, the chief engineer, the head of security, our guidance counselor, and Ensign Ricky. Oh, by the way, one of us is possibly going to die.
Hey, are you wearing a red shirt, meatbag? What'd you call me? Oh, God.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I also want to point out about Star Trek is, what actually is their chain of command? Because I was in the military when I deployed to Afghanistan, my last deployment, I was the team leader. So let's just say my squad leader got shot in the face. I was then in charge. In Star Trek, if Captain Picard gets shot in the face or turned into a robot, who's in charge? Because you would think Riker. But at the same time, one minute it's like Riker, but then the next minute he just kind of acquiesces and like they don't have a firm chain of command. And also the facial hair's got to go.
No, because Riker sucks when he doesn't have facial hair.
Right.
No, so, Riker sucks without the beard.
So what bothers me most is it's the chain of command above the ship, because it seems that every 8 minutes there's a new admiral that somehow they have to respond to. It's like, what kind of a crazy web chain of command do they have that like every admiral in the fleet is responsible for your ship? And also, yeah, they keep calling the Enterprise the flagship. A flagship is called a flagship because it flies the flag of an admiral on the ship, which means that not only is it would have a captain who's in charge of the boat, of the ship, the Enterprise itself, and then you would have an admiral, the flag admiral, who would be in charge of the rest of the bloody fleet, which is why it's called a flagship. Not because it's the new ship, not because it's the biggest or the best or the strongest or the worst. No, it's called the flagship because it's the one where the admiral's butt is in.
Can I point out one more thing you said there?
Hmm.
In charge of the fleet. When have you ever seen a fleet in Star Trek?
You saw it once at Wolf 359, and they got their butt kicked by one big giant cube.
Also, the Dominion War.
Okay, not TNG.
Oh,
that
sorry.
Was DS9.
Well, you just said Star Trek.
Yes, indeed, yeah. You did see a fleet. You saw four fleets because there was the Klingon or five. Yeah. So the Klingons, the Romulans, the Federation, the Cardassians, and the Dominion.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, like it's, since we're talking about the future and terrible depictions of military in the future, can we talk about the depiction of the composition of military units in the future? And I'm pointing to the women in these depictions, because I have served with several women, several, probably even hundreds, and I've never had them act or become this way. Like, prime example, right? Well, let's look at Starship Troopers. Let's look at that terrible crap fest.
And what annoys me is that the book was so good, but the movie is so bad.
Okay, a movie that goes from having such great depictions of women in the military to such poor depictions of women in the military. One of the things that I loved is the shower scene where they're all just showering together, and it's like, it doesn't matter.
Nobody cares.
We're just troops. And then it's, wah, 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 she still loves his girlfriend, but I've been pining for him since we were kids. Shut up. Even though you're really hot, Dina Meyer.
She's also a redhead.
Yes. That is under the category of she's really hot. But yes, I agree with you 100%. And one of the things that really pisses me off is when, for some reason in a military movie, they decide to, I don't know, have sex in the middle of a battlefield. I'm looking at you, Passchendaele.
Passchendaele, and oh my God, was I so mad at Enemy at the Gates. What a great, amazing movie with great consultants. The story, the entirely made up story of Vasily Zaitsev versus Major Koenig, did not really happen. There was no Major Koenig. It was a complete propaganda manufacture of the Soviet government. What a well done movie until the sex scene.
Yeah.
Why did that need to be in my movie?
Honestly, I think most military movies, can we just remove the sex scenes and the romance plots, and they'll be much better movies. I'm looking at you, Pearl Harbor.
Oh,
well, you know what? You know what? You know who's attached to that one? You know whose name's on that one?
Is that Michael Bay?
Yeah. You know who's, and here's the deal. Michael Bay, I'm pretty sure the term woman in his dictionary is equal to, but not limited to, sex bot, inhuman construction for the approval of the male gaze, sex toys.
Let's just say that he doesn't understand why the lamp test is a bad test.
I'm pretty sure he wipes his behind with almost every form of, this is not an appropriate depiction of women. The Bechdel test, all kinds of things. Any sort of thing that would bring a woman on an equal plane as a man, so, in Michael Bay's eyes, can be set afire.
So Jason, you know about the lamp test, yes?
Yeah.
Where if you replace the female character with a lamp, is there any change in the movie, story, or plot? And that is my favorite test.
And if it's a Michael Bay movie, it
fails the lamp test every time.
I'm not imagining that opening scene of Transformers
with a lamp,
where she's bent over the hood of the car, and you get like that super long butt shot.
It's that IKEA lamp you just bought, right?
It's that really cool IKEA lamp that's just propping up the hood of the car.
By the way, can we please get a YouTube clip of that? Can someone please redo every Michael Bay film and just replace the main female
with a lamp?
With lamps, yeah, and that'll work. Yeah, so I mean, there's so many good war movies and military movies that get ruined by these romances that don't need to happen. You can have female characters and not have that happen.
Hyena Road.
Yes,
the Paul Gross movie about Canada's involvement in Afghanistan. A pretty good movie. They got a lot of things right. They went to Oman. They filmed there. They built a really good looking FOB as a backdrop for a lot of the scenes. It's actually not bad. I have a couple little and some big problems with it, but not a bad flick. Involved a love story, but I thought it was done well because it
was based on actual stories, right?
Right, and that's the thing. It was based on actual stories that he compiled of troops that had been to Afghanistan. So he sort of compiled that together and made this war movie. Kind of cool. The romance and the way that it happens in the story and the way that they're sort of like sneaking around and they're smooching behind a sea can where no one can see them. That's kind of how it happened. Not Passchendaele, where he is passionately making love to this nurse in front of a wrecked house during an artillery barrage.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, does not happen that way.
I was okay with most of the romance in Passchendaele.
Until that part.
I mean, like, it just went way too far. And the neat thing about these Paul Gross war movies that I find really interesting is every time you say, okay, that's completely preposterous, there's no way that that happened, and then you find out, no, that's based on actual accounts.
So, war is weird, man. We see, you know, lots of weird things happen. I don't mind his movies. Yeah. I think I would have liked Passchendaele more without the sex scene.
Yeah, I think he got better with Hyena Road.
Hyena Road, he did get a lot better. There was a lot of little things that he got wrong, but the way that he brilliantly spliced in some stock footage with the sets that they built, I thought it was very, very well done.
Yeah.
Jason already mentioned wearing berets. You people don't know how to wear them. It's Okay, if you are a struggling filmmaker or a beginning filmmaker, at least get the uniform guide and at least see how the uniform is supposed to be worn.
It's not supposed to look like your dad's uniform. I'm looking at you, Veronica Mars movie.
Right. So there, I'll give you a good example. The Deus Ex Mankind Divided. There's a scene at the very beginning where it's sort of like the opening credit shot as you're walking through this factory while they're assembling military grade cyberware, and this is set in Montreal in the near future, and they're talking to the guy's wearing the uniform of a Canadian general, and the medals are correct, the way he's wearing the uniform is almost correct, except for the fact that when a man wears a business suit, it's considered part of fashion that the bottom button is always undone. On a military uniform, all of the buttons are done up. But in every scene that you see this general, he's got the bottom button of his jacket undone, of his tunic undone, because they thought about it as a suit, as fashion. They never bothered to consult an army guy and say, hey, do you button that bottom button? It's a minor change. It would have taken 8 seconds to figure out and then fix the graphics, but they didn't care to ask. They made a mistake, and it completely threw me out of it. Just at that point, I lost it. Just that they can't even wear the tunic correctly.
So other really bad examples before we wrap up.
Like movies or just acts of badness?
Anything.
Because there's one that we haven't talked about. We brushed up against it, but not, we haven't talked about it. And almost every friend of mine who's ever watched a movie that has some form of military in it, especially when they're doing basic training, I've only seen one actor do an actually correct push-up.
Exactly. One.
Like, seriously. Like, I remember one time we were watching, these guys, we went out, we saw a movie, we were watching it, and I can't remember what it was, but we were doing push-ups, and we just all, like, simultaneously, without speaking, just started going, one, 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 not going to get any higher, Private, one, one, as they were doing these push-ups, because we're like, that's not a push-up.
So, I've seen an actor do it, but it wasn't in a movie. It was the actor who plays Kylo Ren when he went to visit the troops, because he's a former Marine.
He's a Marine? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that. Now, you know who
Adam Driver, that's his name.
You know who I did see do a proper push-up? What's her name from Aliens? I can't remember that character's name.
Ripley?
Ripley.
No.
Because she does
Although in Alien yep. 4, she does do some real good push-ups.
Yeah, she does.
But no, in Aliens with Bill Paxton, the Hispanic female.
Vasquez.
She does some really good. That plane across her shoulders, you can lay a board on it.
Hey, Vasquez, yeah. You ever been mistaken for a man? No. Have you? I love that movie.
By the way, that movie, again, want to talk about a good depiction of a good unit?
Absolutely.
Because all the talk and all the crap that they give one another, that's how it happens. Like, that's exactly how it happens.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, the, Sergeant Harvick, was that his name? Chomping on the cigar?
Yes. Oh, can I just say the one trope about military that I hope never changes is the cigar chomping staff sergeant or first sergeant or whatever. Like, just forever.
Well, that was one of the things that I tried, that when I got promoted to sergeant, it's that I have to find myself a little stubby cigar that I just chomp on all day. I never light the thing and I never smoke it because I don't smoke, but it just has to be there. It's a badge of rank. It's like the third stripe, you know. It that's what it do.
It's why Sergeant Major Johnson in the Halo franchise is my favorite character.
So, lastly, what is some poor representation of the military, but you just don't care because you love it so much?
Nothing's coming to mind. Why, Nutty? What are you gonna say?
Oh, I'm not sure. I just assumed there had to be something.
No, because generally that stuff annoys me, and I don't pay attention to it, and I don't play those games or watch those movies again.
I like a lot of bad movies, and but not a lot of bad military movies. Oh God. Under Siege. Oh my God, Under Siege.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, really? That movie's so terrible, but Gary Busey wins it for me. Gary Busey is a treasure and should be treasured, him and Tommy Lee Jones in that movie.
Oh, so does Fifth Element count?
I love that.
Corbin Dallas is in the Army.
He is a major, and they mentioned that briefly, but you know, I've talked about Fifth Element before. I hated that movie when it came out because I wanted a straight shooting Star Wars sci-fi, and then when I didn't get it, I was upset. But now I don't care that it's campy and over the top. That's what sells it for me, and it is hilarious because, yet again, the military is not the joke. But if I could go back and reshoot that movie, I would change their berets and I would just like form them properly because, wow, they're bad.
You know, and coming from someone who disagrees with his style of beret wearing, I even have to say they wore those berets terrible.
Oh, yeah.
They were so bad. But I will say this, President Tiny Zeus Lister, I'm all about it.
Oh, I got one for you, Tech. Thunderbirds.
The Thunderbirds are go. I love that show. It can do no wrong. They weren't military.
Weren't they?
They were a private rescue organization. Oh.
You know, another movie that actually has a tie to the military, and you could say it actually depicts a good little bit of PTSD, is Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Riggs.
Yes. It's Lethal Weapon 1.
Yeah, 1 specifically. Before Mel Gibson became insane.
No, I think he was always. It just, we didn't know about it.
He just hit it well.
Yeah,
He stopped giving an F later in life. Once
we were dazzled by his blue eyes, and that was it.
What? My gosh!
But I will definitely agree with you on that one. That was a really good depiction. Another one that the military is completely off, but I think it's kind of part of the joke, would be the British series Allo Allo, which takes place in this French-occupied town during World War II, where this cafe owner is on everybody's side and constantly trying to keep all the balls.
Smuggling art. Yeah. And everything else. No. And he's got like escaped RAF pilots hiding under the beds. And...
Yeah. No. So go ahead.
I was going to say, that's a good thing you pointed out. A lot of British.
Oh, Hogan's Heroes. Sorry.
Hogan.
A lot of British media creators do really good jobs at depicting the military, and they do a really good job, especially with the comedy, of making the military a part of the joke and not the butt of the joke.
Well, look at Monty Python and all of the bad skits that they did, where all of a sudden, halfway through, Graham Chapman walks in wearing an army colonel's uniform. But everything must stop here. Much too silly in here.
Much too silly.
Then they move on to something else because they're using it to set up the joke. It isn't the joke, which is why Stripes and Private Benjamin and all those other disasters fell flat on their face, because the army was the joke.
So Shane actually mentioned another British show, and it's Dad's Army, which was a 70s BBC comedy about the Home Guard.
I never saw it.
Never saw it, but we did see Lad's Army, which is a play on that name, right, which is a reality show.
Yeah, no, Lad's Army was something different. Another one that, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about In the Army Now.
God.
The police show.
It's Tank Girl and Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
You had to bring it up, didn't you, bud?
And Andy
didn't
Dick.
You, buddy?
And Andy Dick.
Yeah, and Andy. Oh, God, Andy Dick.
Can we put a moratorium on in referencing any Pauly Shore movie? Like, because it's not that he can't act. We don't know if he can't act. You know why? Because he does the same thing in every movie.
That's what happens with comedians. Look at the first bit of Adam Sandler movies. Look at the first bit of the Will Ferrell movies. Look at the Pauly Shore movies. I mean, they're all like, they just do this same shtick over and over. So some other really good ones. Forrest Gump.
Voted on by veterans as the most accurate depiction of what conflict on the ground in the Vietnam War was actually like, because you never actually see any of the Vietnamese, which is what a lot of the vets reported. I thought it was done incredibly well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of problems with this movie, but for all of his problems as a director and a film creator, he is superb. But Clint Eastwood's American Sniper, there are problems with that movie, and there are a ton of them.
I don't know if we have time to get into that tech.
But I will say this. I went and saw that in theaters, and I kid you not, I had a flashback to Iraq. When that opening sequence, when they had the morning prayers or the afternoon prayers going over the speakers, and I was taken back to a place that I didn't think I was going to go back to for a while. And it was very accurately depicted, that whole sequence. And there's other sequences in it that are very accurate. But my God, are there problems with that movie.
I had that with Passchendaele, where there's a scene where they're flying the helicopters into the fob. And it was really real. And all of a sudden, I'm on a helicopter again.
You know, that's such a big shame for me with that movie, with American Sniper, because it started, like, the whole time I was sitting there, because I saw it with Jen, and I was like, holy crap, that's exactly how it was. Like, there were moments where I would lean over and be like, that is absolutely accurate, like, 100% accurate. And then there were other moments where I'm rolling my eyes so hard, I think I saw the back of my skull.
So, thoughts on We Were Soldiers?
I'm really biased with that, because if I'm not mistaken, it's We Were Soldiers, where they have the scene where they're walking across the bridge after they get routed, and they're kind of meeting back up and rallying, and as they cross the bridge, they're taking head count, and one guy goes, "Easy Company, first of the 501st," and I was like, "Yes, that's my favorite." Yeah. A little biased.
The only scenes I remember from that movie is the Sergeant Major and his surly greetings to that same troop. "It's a beautiful day, Sergeant Major. What are you, the goddamn weatherman? Oh, hello, Sergeant Major. Who are you to tell me what kind of goddamn day it is?" I love that guy.
Yeah.
One other bad representation that they don't do very often, because they never do it accurately: paratroopers leaving a plane.
Yeah.
Oh man, so many people, like, God, was it We Were Soldiers? I think it was We Were Soldiers. Go ahead.
No, finish your thought. I have something else to bring up.
Because one of the things you learn as a paratrooper, you don't rush to the door. Rushing the door is bad. When you're traveling that fast and you have a cord attached to your backpack that has a parachute in it, you don't want to get anywhere near that thing when it gets pulled taut. But they rush the door. They're just right on each other's butt. And somebody's getting smacked in the face with a ripcord.
Now,
sorry.
Now, different countries have different drills, because Canadians and other paratroops, they throw the connector and they rush that door. They jump out that door as fast as they can.
See, we go through as fast as we can, but that cord is super dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
specifically, a guy who was in my unit, he did that. He slung his static line.
Yep.
And when you do that, the black hat will not try to get it, because the risk of him getting caught in it, and then he's stuck in it if it pulls taut and he's in between it and the plane. So they don't get it. They let it get pulled taut when you go out of the plane. Well, it's flippity flopping and going back and forth. It popped him in the bicep. Ruptured his bicep and tore it down to his wrist.
Oh.
Why you don't throw your static line, children.
So what I have to bring up, very quickly. So we talked about how you use the military to set up your joke, but the military is not the joke. But there is one movie, series of movies, that I really enjoyed that does it all wrong and sets up the army as a joke, but they do it in such a farce that you end up liking the Hot Shots movies anyways.
Oh, Hot Shots.
Oh, was cool.
He's like, "What? You'll have to speak up. I can't hear you. I took a bazooka round at Iwo Jima." Or was it Little Bighorn? Yeah, the one without the Indians.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I think the reason why that works is because it's so buffoonish.
Is that a joke? No, that's not a joke. This is a joke. What do you do to an elephant with three balls? You walk him and pitch to the rhino.
I think I'm going to have to bleep that one out.
Well, no, because he's talking about baseball. He's got three balls and no strikes. So what do you do? You walk him and pitch to the rhino.
Yeah.
I love that joke. It's so bad.
I forgot about those movies. Man, I need to go see those movies again.
Okay, so your list of the best war movies of all time.
Go ahead.
Oh.
Go.
No, you were looking at this list. I thought you were going to bring this up.
No, this was just research.
Okay, never mind.
See? Man, best war movies? Gosh.
I got one I want to ask about your thoughts on Biloxi Blues.
Loved it. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah.
Biloxi Blues was bad. Like, it's kind of dry.
What?
It's kind of dry.
Not much happens.
Yeah, like...
They lose their virginity. That's kind of important. They go through basic training, you know? Some jokes are said.
No, Matthew Broderick. You know, I like Biloxi Blues. looking across your list of best movies there, high on my list will always be Platoon.
Yeah, I figure Apocalypse Now and Platoon, like, people are always going to talk about.
I did not like Apocalypse Now.
But to me, those are, like, such grandiose, like, I don't know. Like, Apocalypse Now is an art movie, not so much a war movie.
An arty spectacle kind of a movie. Like, yeah.
Remind me of one of my favorite scenes from Hot Shots Part 2.
the two riverboats pass each other.
Yeah, the two riverboats referencing Apocalypse Now, and you've got Martin Sheen on one and Charlie Sheen on the other, and they both scream and point at each other.
I loved you on Wall Street.
just throw out some really bad ones. And then we're just gonna wrap this up.
Thin Red Line.
Ooh, Jason.
Other than Green Berets, anything with John Wayne in it.
Oh.
Yeah, Green Berets pretty bad. Sorry, George Takei. I'm actually
Delta Force or anything with Chuck Norris in it.
Woo, get him.
Yeah, but it's Chuck Norris, so.
Commando.
Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Yes, you're right. I completely agree with you. Since when are you saying Commando? Oh, that's awesome.
But I love that movie for everything that it is. But all of the military and the guns and everything is wrong.
So
but
that is your, it's a poor representation, but you don't care.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Because of it. Oh, come on, Arnold and the witty one-liners. It's I thought you said you'd kill me last. I lied.
I'm a commander in the United States military. Were you born here? Shut up.
He throws him off a cliff. It's like, what'd you do to Mendoza? I let him go.
Commando is one of the greatest things ever put to film. Oh, God. I thought you said you were going to kill me last. I lied.
Shane says, and I agree with him, that currently Orphan Black has very poor representation with the Castor clones. I agree 100%. That was awful. Anything.
God, is she a good actress, though. Oh, my God.
Yes, Tatiana Maslany is amazing.
She's gorgeous. Oh, God.
Simmer down.
Oh, gosh. It's not a military movie directly, but I think it's, again, I'm going back to the Clint Eastwood wheelhouse here. Gran Torino.
We didn't see it.
Oh, my God. He plays a Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. Who ends up living next door to a bunch of Vietnamese people, and he kind of has to face his racist fears, and it's absurd in ways, but at the same time, it's really great. And I hate to say this, but seeing Clint Eastwood as an old, wrinkled, bittered man looking at like a 16-year-old Asian girl calling her a dragon lady made me giggle. But then when he becomes friends with them and works through all this stuff and it's just really good. Because
you know what it is? I have a hard time giving any money to Clint Eastwood these days. And watching a movie of him overcoming racism, well, that'd be all well and good if he could do that in real life. So,
well, mind you, he made this movie before we knew he was an insane.
Yeah, before he talked to the chair.
Yeah, before he was an insane, slightly senile racist. We just thought he was just an old grumpy man.
Yeah.
And this was when we still thought he was that. So.
So before we wrap up, I just want to rapid fire favorite military games. Shane is has said that his favorite military game is Medal of Honor Frontline.
Call of Duty 4.
with the ghillie suit sniper mission and the last scene with sliding the pistol across the bridge, probably the greatest first person shooter ever made.
I'm gonna have to say a recent one. I'm gonna have to say Battlefield 1, and I say that because of the opening sequence of that game. It's in a battle that you've lost and you're in full retreat, and you play different characters with different weapons, different, you know, ammunition and things like that. And every time you die, it gives you the birth and the date of the death of that actual soldier, and it just moves from character to character to go through that. And it's a really, really powerful thing because, like, Battlefield 1, the reason why they did that naming convention was because they went back to World War 1.
Right.
And this is like killing dudes with your E-tool and some more stuff. And it's
on horseback. And
yeah, that opening sequence of that game is absolutely superb.
I'm going to go way old school, and I'm going to say Hogan's Alley because I killed with that NES gun.
Ooh.
Literally.
Deep cut there.
So much better than that stupid dog laughing at you.
By the way, you know they remade that, right?
And on that note,
that's my line.
This has been Nutty Bites, and with me I have had...
Hi, I was Tech.
And where can people find you?
You can find me at all my rantings and ravings at nimlast.org. You can find all of my stories as I try to learn Aikido the hard way at upsidedownandflying.tumblr.com.
Or?
At Twitter, at Flying.
No. Your website.
Right.
What is my website now? Do you remember it?
Upsidedownandflying.ca.
There you go.
Soon to be coming to you with a podcast as soon as I get off my keister and record a couple more episodes so that I can get
and
them
edit
up there.
And editing is important.
Yeah, in there somewhere.
That's what he married a podcast producer for.
And also with me, we've had...
Jason, one of the members of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast, and I'm going to do a shameless plug here. Please go rate and review us on iTunes because we finished. This has been a year long process for me of actually separating and getting the podcast a bit more organized.
This has been longer than a year.
It has kind of sort of been.
This has been like 2 years at least.
They don't know that. But no, it's done. Everything is now on iTunes. We've got the Talk Nerdy to Me main feed. We've got Talking Comics. We've got Big Bear's Den. We've got Anime 101. We've got Nerds in Real Talk. And we got Nerds on Cinema. So literally everything we used to talk about and cram into one thing is now easily compartmentalized so you can come get it at your leisure.
Or you can get the whole feed like me and just junk out on all the Nerdy to Me's.
Indeed. But yeah, man, review us, please. It helps us out a lot, though. And I'm doing a competition because I have things to give away, and mainly because Jen keeps telling me to stop collecting posters and things. TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/NerdyToMe. And, of course, you can find us on Twitter at NerdyToMePodcast. And prizes.
How's that Halloween of Horror list coming along? By sometime in August, will you still need suggestions?
I'll take all kinds of suggestions because here's the deal. After you've done 124 episodes of horror movies, going through and trying to find out what you haven't done, it's kind of hard. I also just realized we hadn't done a Candyman or, if I'm not mistaken, we haven't done Candyman. We haven't done, I don't think we did a Leprechaun either.
Yeah, both of those I pointed
Speaking
out to you.
Of, I think the release date is October 27th, but,
Flatliners?
Jigsaw.
You and Jen, I'm going to bring your book.
Fine, me and Jen will go see it.
So for the Nutty Bites listeners, the Halloween Horror Fest, Jen and Jason go through 31 days of scary movies and they report them back to you. And it's a lot of fun. And that's why he's not doing Dog Days, because he doesn't know how to do 5-minute episodes. So thank you very much. I hope that you enjoyed this. And I hope that you are enjoying the rest of the Dog Days. And I hope this actually comes out in August, or this sounds weird. Anyway, talk to y'all later. Bye.
Don't cut it, Shane. We're going to do Razor Blade Smile in October, I promise.
Join us for the Bicast, a podcast by and for the bisexual community.
We discuss and give voice to all of us under the big umbrella, bringing you information, news, entertainment, and support for all.
You can find us at thebicast.org, at the Bicast on Twitter, the Bicast on Tumblr, and Bicast in iTunes. visit the Bicast page on Facebook and see how you can join the Facebook group.
And remember, you're not wrong, and you are not broken, and you are not alone.
So pull up your favorite comfy chair and relax.
And remember, everybody gets a cookie.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.
I feel left out.
Yep.
Okay, Jason, the point of me writing a note is to so I don't have to edit later. You saying I feel left out means I now have to edit. Thank you.
I might have just felt left out because I haven't got any love from tech today.
I'd still have to edit that out. So thanks.